Hello, welcome to the fifth episode of Bits and Pieces. After a long, long, long break, we are finally back. Yes, it's true, we are still alive, and we promise, like usually, to do more and more episodes from now on. Today we will start with a State of the Union, then we will, as promised, talk about work tools, some more work-related things, then mean viruses that keep attacking all of us, and finally we will talk about activities to do while it's dark and cold outside. We are your today's hosts. I am Luki.
And I'm Toby. Well, Luki, you sounded very, very apologetic about the whole thing. I don't feel so bad. At least we keep our promises that we will talk about work, right?
Yeah, so you're really optimistic, but let's hope any of our listeners, if there still are any of our listeners there, will appreciate our efforts, and we really try to do better from now on. But you prepared something on our State of the Union, right, Toby?
Yeah, well, maybe this was bad communication. I didn't prepare anything on our State of the Union, but actually on the State of the Union, meaning the European Union. And since it's a very depressing topic, I thought it might be a fitting start to this very long time without us. Well, if anybody of you has been listening lately to the news, you might have heard that all things are not so going so well at the moment. I thought I just had this revelation at some point. I don't know if I was sitting on the toilet and it just came up to me, but thinking about Europe, I really think about the shitty situation at the moment. What do you say to this, Luki? What's your opinion?
I think I barely ever read anything good in the news about this, to be honest. But then again, it's news, so you barely ever read anything good in the news about anything. Or what do you say?
Yeah, that's completely true. Unfortunately, luckily, there are some websites which provide positive news. But yeah, in this case, we are not talking about that. Well, what I wanted to talk about is just draw a general picture about the State of the Union very quickly, because we don't have time for a more comprehensive approach.
Sorry, can I interrupt? Are you really going to draw a picture, like in drawing with a pencil to confuse everyone, or are you going to talk about it?
No. Luckily for you all, this is an audio program, so I won't draw a literal picture because then you wouldn't see anything. Probably anything good would come out of that. Anybody who ever played Activity with me knows that. No, I meant just look at different topics. If we look at Europe at this moment, and if we look back the last few years, we had this Greek debt crisis, and then also some other smaller debt crisis, which resulted in the end in a euro crisis, where everybody got depressed and only talked about how we are going to save our common currency. And if it's going to survive, then if you remember, we had this uprising in North Africa and in the Middle East, which led to the Syrian war and then to ISIS coming up and then to a refugee crisis, which came to Europe to some degree, I have to say, and then led to terrorism. And now we are talking about border controls and if we abolish our open borders. So we have this big game field. Then we have the Brexit, so the Brits who are about to decide if they want to continue being a member of this club or if they want to go their own ways. And on the other eastern border, we have a war still going on a bit in Ukraine. And with all these crises together, at the same time, we have the rise of these anti-EU populists everywhere. So we have heard in the recent elections in France, there is the Front National, the UKIP in Britain, which kept getting stronger, even though they didn't win many seats in the parliament. Then we have in Austria, we have the FPÖ party. And in some of the countries in Europe, they even managed to get government. So we have since years already Orban in Hungary, with the Fidesz party, and we have Jarosław Kaczyński in Poland, who is the leader of this Law and Justice party, who is also strictly anti-EU and strongly nationalistic in Poland, who won the elections and where they are doing a lot of crazy stuff. So I'm really asking myself at the moment, seeing all these things, will this have a good end? That's a really good question at the moment, I think. And I'm honestly quite a bit worried about all that, because I think we in Europe, we managed to get a really great environment of open borders, which is a great example for the world. And nowadays, it really seems with all these crises going on that this could crumble. And I think the media is only jumping in a sensationalist way from one big topic to the next, from one crisis to the next. But it's very rarely that we look at it in a global approach and really think about what we could lose if we lose Europe.
Yeah, I think that really brings me to our State of the Union, because we are Europeans living in another European country. So, of course, with anything that changes in the whole system, we are probably some of the people who are going to be affected the most. So you're totally right. If we just think what closing down the borders again would mean to us, we usually drive through two different countries or like three different countries whenever we go back to Italy to maybe visit anyone there. Or also other, like a lot of our friends live just on the other side of the border. So if that is a closed border again, that would change a lot of how we live these days, like at least the two of us, I would say, and many, many other people, of course.
Yeah, I totally agree. We would be probably among the people most affected by this. And if one thing is closing the borders and the next step would be maybe abolishing the common currency, so would we have to have three different currencies in our pockets just to drive to Munich, and then a fourth one if we fly to Finland? Mm-hmm. And how would that end for us as a company? If we work with European clients, would we have to keep constant surveillance of exchange rates? And would there constantly be a risk if one currency goes up, the other one goes down, we maybe make a contract and then we completely lose out, or our client completely loses out because we made the contract in our currency? I think this would just be a disastrous development. I don't know if anybody can seriously want that.
But how realistic do you see any of those bad things to happen? I mean, there is one thing is talks, but would you say some of those talks are just happening to scare some people so that something is gonna work out towards the right direction? Or are you really afraid that some of this is going to go downwards?
I mean, as I can only guess, of course, on the level of an average news reader. And on that level, I have to say that there is some danger that things break, because if I think that we are not capable of defending our outside borders and create order, basically, and registrate everybody who comes into the European Union territory, so that the nationals, they are really forced to introduce border controls, or at least they don't seem to be able to cooperate in any other matter at the moment. And then the next step is this euro problem. And if you think about the Brits, who at the moment with the Brexit make a lot of pressure on the euro countries in terms that they say they want to have a say, and in some cases even a veto on some euro policies, and the euro countries say they don't want that at all. At the moment, they are still quite united. At least some core countries in the euro are very strongly united and want to keep the euro and want to push it even further in a common economic policy. But if those governments crumble because of this very hostile environment, and in general between the refugee crisis and terrorism and all these problems, and more populist governments would get to power in several important states, then I could see that whole system crumbling very fast, actually. I don't want to be fear-mongering right now, but it's realistic that we destroy what we achieved in the last 50 years, I would say.
What should we do? Do you have any ideas of what we could do, like protesting, signing online petitions, or just reading more news, getting more depressed and not changing anything? Like, do you see anything that we could do to have an impact on this?
That's a really good question, because as we discussed already some time ago, we are among the people who are the most affected of this whole development. And if I think this matter is so close to my heart and I don't know really what to do or what could possibly have an effect, because I don't really see myself standing in front of the parliament with a big poster, fuck you government or something like this. The only thing I really see is we can talk to people, we can try to convince people, we can, if we have some media reach, even if it's some micro media reach like we have, we can talk about it and try to bring other people to think about it, because I think there is not much more what we can do. I have never seen too much coming out of an online petition, but then I have also never really followed that. So
the Death Star was never built. I'm sure I signed that online petition.
No.
Okay.
But yeah. I think what is certainly a big problem at the moment is that traditional media very often is very imprecise in their communications. For example, I see it very, very often in media that the EU is blamed for a lot of things, that don't work. For example, I've read the local media here in South Tyrol, and they blamed the EU for the not working of the defense of our outside EU borders, so in Greece and in Italy and everything. And they always blame the EU. But who they should blame in these cases is the member states of the EU. Because the member states, there's always some member states who don't want to participate. And then they say, point the finger to the EU. But who is the EU? The EU, in my opinion, as EU institutions, is the Commission and the Parliament. Because the Council is the representation of the different member states. And the big problem at the moment is that member states always have a way, has still best possibility to back out of common solutions. And normally it's like that the Commission and the Parliament have proposals for common solution, like how to defend our outside borders, or how to prevent the Greek crisis, what we could do, what measures. And then the member states come in, but hey, I don't want to pay, I don't want to participate, it's not my problem, I'm far away in the north, or I'm on an island in the ocean, I don't see the Syrian refugees in Greece being my problem. Mm-hmm. And as long as the news is not reporting this in the right way, people will always have a negative opinion of the EU, even though that one didn't have anything to do with those approaches in the first place.
Okay, so we don't know what's going to happen, but at least we promise that we're going to keep reporting about this. Can we at least say we're doing that?
We can say that, and we can really ask our listeners to, hey, inform yourselves well. There is some good news sources, independent news sources about what's happening in Europe. I will post about those in the show notes, so check those out. They are really interesting.
Okay, but then from the State of the Union, let's go to work topics, because we all love work topics and it's in the tagline of our podcast, so we have to talk about it. Woohoo! No, but this is actually a topic that has been maybe one of the first things that we talked about, starting our own company. It was actually something that we didn't want to ever have, and somehow now we ended up doing it. I'm talking about Harvest, which we started using within our company a few months ago. It is a tool for time tracking and budgeting projects. And at least if we think back of when we started our company, Toby, we were saying, let's never, ever have people stamping in hours. Do you remember those times?
Yeah, that was actually the reason why we created it in the first place. I think at least I was quite unhappy with stamping hours.
Yes, and so was I. And now, some years later, a little smarter, or perhaps smarter, we started tracking hours. But that has several reasons. Mostly it's because we have gotten so many more projects running concurrently, so many projects running at the same time, and the team that also grew quite a bit over the years. So it's just, or we were at the point where it was impossible for us to do the work that we were supposed to do and have an idea about where budget was going and like within the projects and inform our clients about it. So we just had to find a way or clean up how we track progress within projects and how we track time spent on the different projects. And of course, that means that somehow you need to track the time that you're spending.
Yeah, but I think the way we track hours is not the reason why I, for example, didn't like my previous work, because in my previous work, I had to track time in terms of how much time did you spend at work, at the workplace, whereas we measure how much time do you spend on a project per day. So if you work on 5 projects, you track basically every of those projects in order so that we can precisely invoice our clients, which I think is a different approach. The one is the approach to control if the employee is fulfilling his or her hours on the workplace, whereas the other one is in order to see if we are within budget with a client, which is a more legitimate cause for time tracking, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. And of course, we were thinking a long time, like how we should do this or should we not do it? But there's just no way around it. If you have more than 2 projects running at the same time, you have to track somehow how much time every person is spending more or less on the different projects. And that's also how we are doing it. It's not that everything needs to be done to the last exact hour, but it's more of, okay, you know, pretty much what you're doing. And then we can, at the end of the week, pretty much decide, okay, those hours make sense, those hours don't make sense. And we can then just report towards our client what has been happening and how much that's going to cost them in the end. But let me talk about Harvest itself. It's a web application. They also have some native apps for pretty much all the operating systems and devices. So you can run it on your phone, you can run it on your computer, you can run it in the browser, whatever you feel like. And it has different parts that it consists of. One being the time tracking component that we have mostly talked about now. And then you can set up different clients with different projects. And for each one of the projects, you can, if you want to, set up a budget. So, you know, this project should not exceed a certain amount of hours, or it should not exceed a certain amount of costs. And then you, track the work that you're doing, track the expenses that you might have on the project. And then you see slowly how the hours that you have assigned to in the beginning are disappearing. And hopefully at the end, you will have the project done. And another component to Harvest is Forecast, which is a tool by the same makers. But that is a tool that you actually use for scheduling future hours. So, you know, you have a team with this many people, but then it's tricky to say, okay, who's going to work on this? Who's going to work on that? Can we actually take on some new work a month from now? How long is it going to take if this person, like, to finish this project, if we have 5 hours a week that this person is going to spend on it? And with Forecast, you do pretty much that. You have all the people there, and then you schedule in what projects they're going to work on at what times. And the nice thing is that it's hooked back into Harvest. So after doing the projects, you can look back at the estimates that you made and compare them to the actual hours that you have taken doing them. So in the longer run, we will really be able as a company to see how we are doing, our estimates worth anything. Are we always up by a certain level, and so on. So all in all, it's a really nice and complete tool set for a agency in the end, like us, that has many people working on many different projects for other clients.
So this is basically for the macro planning of the project. So to plan the big steps, for example, UX design and analysis, and then front-end programming, back-end programming, and those big, big chunks of work.
Exactly.
You can assign those and plan those and then look back if the planning somehow corresponded. And then we also have other tools for the micro planning, right?
Yes, like we have been using Trello for a long, long time already. I think we already talked about it, but anyway, it's a tool that makes a list of to-do lists. At least that's how I always explain it to myself. But within those to-do lists, you have the to-do tasks. They are cards. But lately, Trello has actually improved a lot because they always had the business class, so you could always pay and you would get some additional features for it. But in the past, there were beautiful,
right?
Yes, there were only beautiful backgrounds and stupid emojicons and whatnot. But these days, you can actually include a lot of different apps and hook them into Trello. So within the card, for example, that we would create for a task that has to be done, you can link it to Harvest. So straight from that card, you can track the time that you're going to spend on it. You can track GitHub issues, so where we have our coding issues and so on, you can track them straight on the card. And all in all, it really gives us a very, very good overview of where we are spending time and how much time it is. And at the end of it also, how we can improve our time management so that people in the end, or our employees, can be less stressed out and do more things that they're happy doing. I think that's at the end still our biggest motivation, that also internally we don't need to rush after things because we don't know where we are going, but we actually know, okay, I need to spend this much time on that project, that much time over there. And then if I can get the things done, all is running on track. And it's not that people need to constantly ask, okay, what's coming next? What am I doing tomorrow? What's going to happen next week? Like, all this is becoming a lot more transparent.
And we also basically, through that, we have an early warning system if things run out of time or out of budget, so we can warn the client early on to then we can find a common solution.
Yeah, that's another advantage. But yeah, I have to say, looking back, I have no idea how we functioned the last year without using anything like this. Like, I'm not saying that everyone should do time tracking, but I feel if the team is too big and you have too many things running next to each other, it's a very helpful tool that can make your business advance to the next level.
Yeah. Now to have a golden bridge of moderation, we built quite big projects with this setup, this Harvest and Trello setup. One of them was a huge online shop, right?
Yeah, that was a really nice golden bridge. If you would not have mentioned it, it would have been a red bridge.
Sorry, I was so proud of myself.
We are improving, yes. Yeah, we built a really, really big online shop. I mean, since years now, we do a lot of WordPress development. And for some projects, we also have done e-commerce solutions. And we have used WooCommerce. It's shop system basically built for WordPress, so you can have an online shop as part of your website and it all runs within WordPress. It's very nice to use. You can theme it whichever way you want to, and it's pretty open as well, so you can add a lot of additional features that you can code yourself, or you can download plugins that really enhance a lot of it. And yes, for one client, we have built a really, really, really big store. And that has somehow given me the opportunity to travel to the States, so to the United States of America, in April, because there will be the WooConf, which is the conference of the people making the WooCommerce store system. It's from the 6th to the 8th of April in Austin, Texas. And I'm going to go there and I'm going to present a little bit of what we did within the project that we did. And we'll talk about some of the challenges. We'll show some solutions and hopefully get more people interested in using WooCommerce as a platform sometime from now.
But hey, how did you get to travel to the USA? Were you in contact with the WooCommerce people via support, or how did this work actually?
We have bought some plugins of the company that's doing WooCommerce and some other WordPress plugins as well. And they were sometime before Christmas announcing that they will have the WooConf in like sometime this year. And they were saying if anyone is interested in giving a presentation, or if anyone has interesting topics, please write them and they might consider you, which I then did. I was thinking, okay, we built such a big shop and it's also multilingual, which is always a challenge in itself. So I just sent them a message and was waiting to see what they're going to answer. And then just someday in the morning, I didn't even realize it was an invitation to become a speaker of a conference, but I saw their email and like, WooConf, what exactly was it? Oh yeah, right. I did apply. And so I had a couple of Skype meetings with them. We were narrowing down the topic, and now I still have a couple of weeks to prepare my slides, but then I will fly to the States in April, spend some days in Austin, Texas. It's going to be my first time there. I need to see how it's going to be going straight to Texas. I think with all the people tell you about the States, I'm sure that going to Texas is a great first entry point, but I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm sure it's going to be an amazing experience. And one thing as well, if anyone is interested to go to the WooConf and needs a ticket, we did get some special discount code of people that we know, so you will find it in the show notes. And if you buy the ticket through there, you will get a discount on the ticket. I have no idea how many people have time in April, listen to this podcast and are interested in WooCommerce, but anyway, let's see.
What about the people who want to watch you speak but can't really travel to the US? Is there a possibility to watch it via a live stream, or do they have any other way that you can see your presentation?
To be honest, I don't know. I'm pretty sure, unless they won't allow me, but I'm sure they will. I will post the slides to the presentation somewhere to SlideShare or a similar service and share it. And maybe in some of the next podcasts, we can talk about this. Maybe I know more by then. Right now, cool. I don't know. But yeah,
I'm looking forward to that. Even though I won't see it, I'm still looking forward to it and to your talk afterwards about it.
Yeah. I will tell some of the things in this podcast, I'm sure.
But won't we have a presentation also in Finland about that, or is that not confirmed yet? At least I remember there was some talk that we might present it also in Finland, or do the same, or more or less same presentation.
That might be happening. I think we handed in the topic there now. I'm going to be speaking at the WordConf, at the event that will be, which is at the same time as the WordCamp Helsinki. So it's some people meeting in Helsinki talking about WordPress related things, and they were also asking for speakers, and we did hand in the similar topic, and maybe one of my colleagues is going to speak there. But we will see, and if we get a confirmation there, we can announce that in the podcast. There might be more people having the ability coming to Helsinki, checking out the speech. Yes.
Cool.
I'm going to have a long travel. You did have a long travel not so long ago, Toby. There was something in the air, wasn't there?
Yeah, true that. I have been on holiday over Christmas, or better said, over New Year's. I spent my holiday in Martinique, which is an overseas department of France. So it's in the Caribbean, not too far from the coast of Venezuela. And yeah, it was an awesome holiday. I mean, Caribbean weather was beautiful. It was warm. And also the island generally is very nice. It's not a too touristy place, so it's really, if you want to have a quiet holiday but still nice beach, it's a good place. But still, not everything can be good. the day I arrived on the 27th of December, the current Zika epidemic started in Martinique, and I also got infected. So a mosquito stung me, an infected mosquito, and I got those beautiful dots. But I didn't get the fever, which is also in most cases, you don't even get the fever. But I got some, I really felt fluish otherwise. I was extremely weak. And I was so weak one day that I went to the hospital in Bolzano. So in our region in South Tyrol. And there talked to the doctors, showed them my skin, and we talked about my symptoms and everything. And well, they couldn't really do a test because they didn't have the equipment there. But they told me from all my symptoms and everything, it's quite clear that I got infected with the Zika. And only afterwards, all this information in the news started, because this was already at the beginning of January. And a week afterwards, it was called an epidemic and a pandemic soon afterwards. And right now it's already in 34 countries. And the disease itself isn't really bad. It's like a flu, basically. And you get some red dots on your body.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. Like, is there anything that can still happen to you? Or now that the dots are gone, are you all well again?
Well, now it's so long ago that probably nothing can happen anymore. I mean, I would have to check that to be completely sure, but some weeks afterwards, it's possible that you get the Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a bit of an awful disease. I didn't really understand what it was about in detail. I mean, it's some muscle weakness, which starts because of some the virus attacks the nerves. So this can be an after cause of the Zika, but you can also get this from the flu. And I don't know what the probabilities are that you get that. And it can also lead to death, apparently, in 5% of the cases, even though if it's treated, in 5% of the cases, it's deadly. And yeah, it can also attack the heart and all kinds of things, the respiratory system. Then you can also get the myelitis from the Zika virus. It's an inflammation of the spinal cord. You really don't want to get this. It can lead to partial paralysis and really awful things. And also encephalitis, which is an inflammation of the brain.
Okay.
But the worst thing and what's happening right now at the moment is that if pregnant women get stung, I mean, you read that probably all over the news, there is a probability. Again, it's not communicated what the probability is. And if you're infected during pregnancy, that your child gets born with microcephaly, which leads to, it can lead even to death of the child. But it leads to a serious impediment of the development of the brain. So it can be that the child has problems in general growth. The brain doesn't grow properly, and therefore the child can have some intellectual problems afterwards. So it's really a bad disease, and that's why they are also fighting it like crazy at the moment. In Brazil, the military was even called to action to hunt the mosquitoes and purge homes. And really, funnily enough, Martinique is one of the most infested regions by now. For example, the neighboring island of Martinique, Guadeloupe, which is just the island a bit north, maybe 100 kilometers north. I have no idea. Maybe a few hundred kilometers. There are 17 cases of Zika till now, whereas in Martinique there are 3,900 cases. So it's really, it's a lot of cases of Zika.
How does it go? Can you just get this if you're stung by the mosquito, or can you also get it because someone has been infected and you are basically like in contact with them?
It's not an airborne disease, so it can't be transmitted like the flu.
Yeah.
in airborne way or through microfluids or something like that. It is not 100% clear, I think, or at least the doctors couldn't tell me. It's not sure if it's sexually transmittable via the sperm. I've read that it is, but I've also read that they are not sure, so I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
Mostly it's the mosquito. And it's the same mosquito same family of mosquitoes that transmits also the malaria and the dengue fever, which is also same type of or similar type of virus.
So
it's, but much, much more serious, the disease itself.
So it's really, really time to eradicate all the mosquitoes from Earth.
Yes, it is. At least I recently listened to an episode of the BBC podcast, The Inquiry. There they ask the question, because they always analyze one question from the news. And there, that time the question was, should we eradicate mosquitoes? And in the end, they answered the question with, yes, they should, but concentrating on the disease-bearing mosquitoes, because those are a special kind of mosquitoes. Those mosquitoes live very long, because they, you know, in order that the virus can spread within the mosquito or also the plasmodiums in case of the malaria, the mosquito has to live for at least, I think, 10 days, and those mosquitoes live for 30 days or something like that. Whereas other mosquitoes are also dead after a week or so. So those are the special type of mosquitoes, and they aren't even important for the ecosystem, apparently. And they could really, we could eradicate them without much further thought, according to the BBC at least, or to the experts they interviewed.
Okay, so on that note, let's go to our hopefully more positive closing topic, which is activities to do while it's cold and dark outside. Yeah, we live in Finland, at least most of our time. And as you can imagine, Finland is quite high in the north, which means there is little sun during winter and it's cold most of the time. So people here have been quite creative at coming up with some kind of activities you can do. And this winter we have discovered some new ones, or we have rediscovered some new ones, Toby.
Yeah, it all started with that we had quite a lot of friends over. So we thought, if so many people are visiting from outside, we better get them something to do. Otherwise, they get bored here. And so we looked and thought a bit. And then we discovered that there is beach volleyball in Helsinki. You wouldn't really associate it with cold, icy Helsinki, but there's the possibility to really play beach volleyball with sand in a sports center. And I think that was quite nice. It was even a bit too warm there, I would say, with the 26 degrees and the moist air.
Yeah, I was sweating like hell.
Yeah, me too. Luckily, there was sauna afterwards. That one, I have to say, was a little bit expensive, if I think about it. It was for 1.5 hours. Beach volleyball, the rent for the field was 108 euros. Yeah. That was, yeah, quite a lot.
I mean, we were there in more people, but considering that usually beach volleyball, you play 2-on-2, that's a lot of money to pay for not too much time you're spending.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But still, if you want to do it and you feel the need for some warm air and afterwards for some nice sauna, you can do that at Salmisaaren Liikuntakeskus. We will put the URL in the show notes, of course.
I wanted to try out since a long, long time, and now finally we managed to do it, was escape rooms. We did two different once at the same time, so we were in two groups, but would you like to explain what escape rooms are?
Yeah, you basically you enter a room with a group of people and you get some kind of riddle at the beginning. You know that you have to get out of the room within 1 hour, but you also need to find out some things in order to do that. But best is to come with an example. For example, I was in the room of airplane abduction. So we knew our airplane had been abducted and we just woke up there, basically, because we have all been gassed or something like that. And then we knew we had to look for a USB stick where we would find further information. And yeah, so we started looking for that USB sticks. And then on that USB stick was a video. And yeah, from there on, the story continued, basically. So we went from clue to clue. We found out who actually abducted the airplane, what were their reasons, and then had to find their baggage in the baggage repository, then had to get access to the cockpit. And yeah, it was a really fun activity, I would say, for a group of people. And it's really fun to see what different roles the different people then assume when being in such a extreme situation, even though it's not extreme, but you want to play with the story, and so you try out a lot of things. But there's a lot of different scenarios. At least in Helsinki, there are 9 providers of escape rooms and a total of 30 different room themes. And the themes go from airplane abduction. The other room we tried, where you were in, Luki, was the 4 elements. Mm-hmm. Then apocalypse, then KBG agents on the loose, president's dinner, children's nightmares. So there's really a lot of topics.
I've heard there's one about the children of Bodom. So like the serial killer the mass murderer that killed some teenagers some evening, some many years ago next to a lake. So the usual horror story people keep telling each other that has actually happened.
Exactly. It has also a good name, I think, this Lake of Bodom.
Yeah, but talking about horror, there is another activity that we did. Do you?
Yeah, we did that for our Christmas dinner. After Christmas dinner, we went to play mini golf. Well, that's not so much associated with horror normally, but the mini golf next to our office is a laser maze haunted house themed mini golf place. And yeah, it's just very funny, I would say, because every mini golf track has its own theme. So from the crazy clown to the zombie track to the what else was there, the ghosts track,
some graveyard, like everything or anything you can imagine. But especially clown room was creepy. I'm happy I wasn't, or I'm not afraid of clowns, but I'm sure some people might
yeah,
freak out there.
And also in this place, what we didn't try, but what I would really like to try one day, is they have a laser maze. So you have to jump between the different laser lines and do a kind of acrobatic moves to basically steal a diamond or whatever the thing is there. I have never tried it out, but generally I think we can recommend this Hohto Golf West Coast in Yrjönkatu.
One activity that's for a change not inside but outside and still a winter activity is disc golf. We have been talking about this already in this podcast, but this year we started the season early. So basically on the 2nd of January, when there was snow everywhere, I was throwing some discs with a friend. It was minus 10, minus 15 degrees. But surprisingly, there were a lot of people out on the course. It's crazy. Like, as long as it doesn't rain or heavily snow, I think it's something that you can really always do. And this year, I have big plans of actually playing it a lot, because it's still such a nice mix. And I even like doing it at different times throughout the years and the different seasons, because the courses are very different to play and they look very different at the different times. Like now going to the same places that usually I only see during summer and playing them in winter, like it's just a really different panorama. I'm still really happy and I cannot tell people enough how much I would like them to play more disc golf.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed it a lot. It was great fun. But you absolutely need the spikes in case there's a lot of ice, because otherwise you can't play on some courses.
And I think that's maybe the last good advice that we give tonight, at least. In Finland, you can buy those strap-on spikes. So the normal shoes you have, and it's pretty much a rubber band with some nails on them, and you can, like, it looks a lot fancier and costs a lot more, but it transforms your normal shoes into shoes with spikes, which can be really helpful in playing disc golf, but also for any other outdoor activity. I would say if you go hiking or even just on the roads, if it's icy roads and you just go to work, they might be a good investment to take. But let's wrap up today. I'm sure we can come up with new topics until the next time. One of them should be the State of the European Union Part 2. If you have liked what you've listened to for the last hour, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast at bunkon.com/podcast. Also follow us on Twitter at bunkon. We will announce whenever there is anything coming there. And thanks for listening. Hope to hear you soon. Lucky.
Goodbye. Toby, I guess.
That was terrible. We need to do this more often.
I know. Sorry.
Okay. Bye-bye.